session number 24623, Reel 5.
Myself, I immediately rode back again to the flat, woke him up. I said, "You better come, there's something happening down here I don't like at all." When we got down there, it was a junction, just a T-junction. The left went along the riverbank, the right went along the riverbank, and then this small street went straight down to the footbridge. So my intention was to stop the vehicle, drive the vehicle down the small street, get out and see if the lads were down there anyway, you see. But as I swung in, I was met with machine gun fire. But it didn't hit me, but they hit the walls.
Yes.
So I did a quick reverse back again. So now it's up to Major Harrison, you see. I didn't know what his plans was. I mean, I'm not in charge. So I said, "What are we going to do?" I said, "Something's happened." I said, "The Germans has got this far." He said, "Well, you go to the bridge and give orders from me to blow the bridge, the road and rail bridge. And I'll stop here until you come back." I never gave it a thought. And off I went, which was about a mile. I saw these lads, and I said, "Orders to blow the bridge." I said, "Whose orders?" I said, "Major Harrison." They said, "Where's Major Harrison?" I said, "I've left him behind." Now they got suspicious. So they didn't know whether to arrest me, shoot me, or what, you see.
Were these the Royal Engineers? Or
these were the Royal Engineers. Because their orders was for Major Harrison to give the order.
Right.
But he didn't tell me that, you see, in the beginning. But however, they took my word for it. And on the way back, down the road, I got hit with machine gun fire, but only at the back of the lorry, the vehicle, which splattered the tailboard, so I knew then the enemy was the other side of the river, somewhere.
They got across.
Yeah, I mean, this is dark in the morning. So I thought, well, I better get back and find Major Harrison and see what I do. But however, when I got back at the T-junction, he wasn't there. And I searched around for him. I couldn't find him, so I parked the vehicle because sometime or other that river ran through the town. But it's now a dry riverbed with all bushes over there. So I thought, well, I better investigate on foot. So I took the vehicle back and I drove down this dry riverbed and concealed it as much as possible. And I went hunting. Of course, now there's very few people around at that time of the morning. But however, I did find a Greek, him and his wife, who was very agitated when they saw me. And I said, "Have you seen anything of a English officer?" You know. "Oh, yes, yes, yes." The Fifth Column had arrested him.
Had you known that there was a Fifth Column
act? Had you known that there was a Fifth Column in? Oh, God, every second Greek was a Fifth Columnist. There was. Now, I'm unarmed because I left my rifle with him for his own protection till I got back then. But this Greek, he got a small automatic machine gun, a Greek, with a drum feed.
Yeah.
And he wanted to get rid of it. He didn't want to be caught with it. So he gave me that. So that I've got something to. So I pumped him well and he more or less told me where the Major was being held by these Fifth Columnists. So I don't know why I did it. I should have jumped in the vehicle and aired off for my own safety, I suppose. But I got a bit angry. Because I didn't know whether the Germans had got him or not, but I thought if the Greek Fifth Column has got him, that really got up my back. And I'll sort them out. I found the place. It was a bit of an old restaurant place it was. And two Greek Fifth Columnists there was, no doubt, but there was dressed as Greeks. with guns sitting on outside this door. Now they made a very fatal mistake, because I hadn't fired this gun, but the bloke had shown me how to fire it. So it was cocked and ready for firing if necessary. And it was a big courtyard. Now I couldn't go round it either way, so I had to go direct. And they were sitting on oil barrels or something with these guns across the knees. Their guns, Tommy guns, you know. So I walked straight across to them, you see. And they let me get within 20 yards off on them before they suddenly realised I was an enemy of some sort. So they immediately jumped up to challenge me, so I didn't hesitate. I just sprayed them.
Both of them?
I sprayed both of them. Fortunately, the gun worked. And I went in there, I kicked the door down sort of business. It wasn't locked, I kicked it open. And there's my Major Harrison sitting there with his head in his hand. He looked at me and said, "Good God, what are you doing here, Newman?" I said, "I'm looking for you." He said, "Had you something to do with them shots outside?" I said, "Yeah." I said, "Don't argue, come on, let's go."
Did he say what had happened to him?
Yeah, the Fifth Columnist grabbed him. Mm. While he was waiting for me to come back for him, they arrested him. Mm. They were going to hang him or something, they were telling him. So I went back to the riverbed and got in the vehicle and I reversed back up on the main road. And now I've got to go up the main street.
You're saying you had to go down the main street?
Yes, I've got to clear the town, but I had to use the main street. So I didn't know what was happening in the main street, you see. So as I swung round into the main street, it was now getting daylight, more or less. And there were six German half-tracks lined up down the street, which they couldn't, I didn't know which way they got there. They definitely didn't come over the bridge that way on. There must have been another bridge at a different angle. And they were servicing the vehicles. And I just casually drove by them, and they looked at me, but they didn't think I was hostile or anything like that. And the street goes uphill. And at the top is a junction. And on that junction was a German police, military police, with a steel disc round the neck. And he'd got a motorbike and sidecar there. A BMW motorbike. So he saw me coming, and he wasn't quite sure. I could see the expression on his face. He wasn't quite sure what to do. So as I got closer on him, he suddenly realised that, first of all, he put his hand up. I thought, "No, you don't." So I put my boot down, and he'd got his Tommy gun, which they always carried up across the neck. So I put my boot down, and fortunately, there's a good engine in that vehicle. And I took off at a rattling pace. I went by him, and I'm on the way out of town before he even got his gun from round his neck.
Did he open fire on you?
I never stopped to look. I just kept going. He might have done for all of that. And I cleared the town. Now I knew roughly where my units was, where my regiment was. So we had to go across the mountains, and eventually I caught up with them. And now Major Harrison now is a... No, I won't say it. He was a frightened man, let's put it that way.
Do you think he'd lost his nerve?
Hmm. Completely. And he got out of the vehicle and he said, his only words to me was, "Who taught you to drive, Newman?" I said, "The army." He said, "They made a bloody bad job of it." That was the thanks I got. Oh no, I'll give him a rough ride. I mean, I was going over boulders this bee. I mean, my intention was to get as far away as possible. So that was the end of that part of the story. Now the unit now, as I joined, is on the Yugoslav border, Bulgarian Yugoslav. So now I'm seconded back again to the and him as well. We've seconded back to our own unit.
Yeah, which was the 7th RTR at that time.
Hmm?
7th RTR? 7th RTR?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So we took a position on the Yugoslav border. Now, I want to emphasise this. We'd got vehicles. We didn't know where there was any petrol. We didn't know where there was any ammunition dumps. We had no air support whatsoever. Not one English aeroplane. And we were facing the might of the German Air Force. And you know what that entailed? Stuka bombers, dive bombers, Junker 88s, Messerschmitt, you name it, and they had got it. And we had nothing.
You have no anti-aircraft weapons?
We did have some anti-aircraft, what they call boofers.
Yes.
Boofers. But the only time I ever saw them was the latter end of the story.
Not when you were on the Yugoslav border?
I never see them anywhere. We knew we had some artillery guns there somewhere, which fired an occasional shot at nothing, because the Germans hadn't come over. But they were probing. I mean, the aeroplanes, I mean, were the Stukas, night and day, the Stukas above us, and every plane under the sun was above us.
Did they do a lot of damage to the vehicles?
Oh, Christ. We hadn't got a god's in hell, son. It was a case of dodging. It was.
And had you done anything to cover the vehicles or camouflage them?
We got the same camouflage on the vehicles as we had when we went out there. We camouflaged our own vehicles, you know.
Yeah, but do you have nets too?
No.
No screws?
No nets or nothing. Yeah. We just painted them green and all this sort of
thing. Right.
And if we had the chance, we'd put cut branches and put on the top and then try to move into a plantation or something like that, you see. And it was so 9 o'clock in the morning. It was a Sunday morning. Major Harrison had gone down to the village for some unknown reason and left me there with the crew and thing. And the radio went. Of course, we didn't have sophisticated radios them days. It was like Morse. And the radio operator said, "Where's Major Harrison?" I said, "He's gone down the village." I said, "Well, he better get back quick," he said. "The Germans are moving over the border onto the Greek army." He said, "But there's no rush. It's only light infantry and motorbikes and sidecars and all this, that and the other, you know, which we could cope with what bit of armament we know." But how did Major Harrison come back then? And he got on the radio on the Morse code. I'm afraid I didn't know what he said because I couldn't do Morse code. And he said, "Right, Newman," he said, we'll fall back. We've got to fall back. So I had to reverse the tank because I got it in an old, what is known as low down position. I reversed it back. And as I swung it round, something hit it. Rocked. I thought, "Good God, what was that?" And I said to him, I said, "What was that?" He said, "Oh, I don't know." Well, we took no notice of it. Reversed back, we took up another position about a mile and a half down the road. I got out of the tank and I'd got a hole in the turret, that big. A shell had gone through it. A shell. Where the hell did he get a shell through it from? Which had bored a hole through it like a drill. Well, we didn't know, because where the position we were in and the Greek army was in was that we were safe on the left of us and the mountains on the Yugoslav border because there were no roads. But what we didn't know, there was roads. And the German panzers with the 2-pound guns had outmaneuvered us and come round to the side of us.
So you...
Sergeant Newman, reel 4.
You're saying that when you reversed out of position, you found that a shell had actually hit the tank.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. But we didn't quite know what sort of shell, because we didn't expect German tanks to be armoured with shells. As far as we was concerned, we didn't know what they'd got. You see, I mean, they could fire at a distance of half a mile, where we was restricted to about 150 yards or 200 yards.
Did you see where the shell had gone?
No, it just went through.
Well, it went through the...
Yeah,
which part of the tank to go through?
Yeah, it went in one side and out the other, because them tanks, there wasn't even armoured plating. But there was against armoured-piercing bullets.
Yes.
But not against shells.
And did it... So it didn't... Obviously, it didn't explode.
Well, it should have done, but it didn't.
It didn't?
No, it kept going.
Had it hurt anybody?
No. The commander up above, he was safe. The wireless operator, he was safe, as he was down in the bottom.
What, in the hull, you?
Well, I was down in the bottom of the drive, and then he was operating the wireless set here.
Yeah.
Then there's a space, and then there's the turret.
Yeah.
And it happened, luckily for us, it went between everybody and out the other side. But at that time, we didn't know what it was that had caused it, you see, because we didn't know that the Germans had Tiger tanks.
Yeah.
We didn't.
So you reversed out of that position, you were going south.
We were travelling south, retreating back.
Yeah.
We was, but we only dropped back so far. Mm. Of course, the Greek army was in front of us, and then the following day they got a right pasting from the German Air Force. And within hours they broke and was in full retreat. So they'd come through our lines and left us to take over then, you see.
What sort of positions were you in on that second line of defence then? Had you got dug in, or were you...
No, we was running loose.
You were running loose?
Yeah, there was several bits of villages around there, and we was taking cover behind houses and, you know, anywhere where you could... Because what we was frightened of was the Air Force.
Yes.
We weren't frightened of anything else, really.
Had the Air Force actually knocked out any of your tanks at that stage?
Well, that's something I wouldn't know, because the 7th tanks, the 7th armoured tanks, was at a way from us on our left.
Yes.
Well, they were the first ones who got hit by the Tiger tanks. Mm. Now, how many of them got hit?
Mm.
I don't know, because you can imagine everything was chaos from then onwards, you see.
What about your own troop, though? Had they suffered any...
Mm?
Had your own troop lost any tanks at that stage?
No, we hadn't lost anything.
Mm. So you were all right?
We was okay, yeah. But not for long.
What were you doing about resupply at that time for food and water, ammunition, fuel, things like
well,
that?
Well, we only got what we was loaded on the tank. We used to carry so much, but we didn't know where there was any arms dumps or petrol dumps or water. But that wasn't a problem, the water, because you could get water out of the villages.
Yeah.
You could. It was armour, food and armour that we were short of.
Did you have an echelon to bring up fuel or anything like that?
Well, you didn't have anything. You didn't know where anybody was, because, as I say, it was Morse code communications. Mm. And so the majority of the communications were done by motorcycle outriders, you know, and messengers, they used to call them. Mm. Of course, they did a disappearing act, didn't they?
Oh, did they?
Which you couldn't blame them.
So you'd withdrawn from Yugoslav border. What happened then?
Well, we watched the Greek army collapse. Mm. And of course, we had no information as to what we were to do, what we wanted to do, which then left us facing the bulk of the German army. But we still didn't know what the German army consisted of. Because at that time, before that time, we hadn't been hit with the massive Air Force thing. We'd had the Stukas over and bombed us and all the rest of it, but we didn't realise that the Air Force, the German Air Force, was operating from just inside Yugoslavia. It was only a 20-minute refuelling thing and back again. And as I say, they relied on the Air Force to do the damage. I mean, non-stop, night and day, we were blasted. You couldn't get cover. Well, you took what cover you could, but... We never got no sleep or anything like that. The They bombed you at night, they bombed you in daytime. They bombed in front on you, they blew the mountain roads, or tried to blow them, so that we couldn't escape. So we were held up by the Royal Engineers, blasting into the mountainside to make a detour round there. It was chaos, absolute chaos it was. It was a case of every man for himself.
But I mean, you said you took a second, you'd withdrawn from the front here and you were on a second line. Did you stay there or did you move back from there?
Oh, we were on the move back all the while.
All right.
We were being pressurised by the Royal German Air Force. Yeah. So.
What about the German ground troops?
Well, they were coming, but they weren't such a hazard as what the Air Force was. Yeah. I mean, we were trapped in them mountain roads, in the mountains. And then Stuka bombers, dive bombers and all that, they could just do what they like with it. But the Germans couldn't do it because they've got to come down the same roads as we were retreating down. But we could see them.
Oh, how far behind you were
they? Oh, half a mile. Especially at night you could see them. As we had no lights on our vehicles because they were took off. But the Germans were coming down up from top of the mountains with blazing headlights. We could sit there and watch them coming.
So were you moving night and day?
Oh, yeah. We the best we could. Mm. It was the best you could.
How did you manage to keep the tanks running then? I mean, how did you manage to get fuel to keep the tanks?
Well, this was the problem. We siphoned, if the vehicles had been blasted off the road, we were siphoning petrol out of lorry tanks or anything we could get hold of. Mm. But as I said, there was no registration or markings of any description given to us where the fuel supplies was, where ammunition supplies was. So we were kind of robbing one another to keep going. Mm. I was fortunate. I got nearly to Athens with my vehicle before it got shot off the road with a Stuka dive bomber, bombed off the road. Mm. And then I was on foot.
How did that happen then?
It was coming down the road, and of course you can't see what's coming behind you.
Yes.
But when the sky's full of Dornier bombers and Stukas and everything, I mean, you're just watching what you can and pulling in as close to the mountainside as possible. Mm. But you don't see what's coming behind you, and evidently a stick of bombs come down and went straight under my vehicle. Mm. Lifted it up in the air and did quite a bit of damage. Mm. And I was picked up then by an Australian, a lorry full of Australians.
What about the other chaps in your tank? Did they?
Oh, they was picked up with me.
They were all right?
Oh, yes. I never lost a fella in my tank. Mm. I didn't, not wounded. Oh, no. Mm. Not even wounded.
Mm. So you picked up by the Australians?
The Australians were in retreat, but they were in lorries and beer swillers, drunk as lords.
Mm. And where did they take you?
Well, eventually, I'd still got Major Harrison with me. Mm. And we got a lift on a tank that was commanded by a Captain Eve, who became a Colonel Eve, and he came to live just down in Asheville here. Mm. And he got in touch with me. And he picked us up. And I strapped myself to the outside of the tank, because them other coats we had a belt at the back.
Yes.
Well, I undid that, and then I put it round the wireless aerial, and I just lay there and I went to sleep. Mm. Travelled all night, fast asleep, strapped to the wireless aerial. That was the first sleep I'd had for a week, which was very nice, I'll tell you. Well, then they lost the tank, Colonel Eve lost his tank.
How did that happen?
Oh, with the Stuka bombs again, he got hit. Mm. And I was with Major Harrison again. And the Australians picked us up once more. And they got us back to Athens. And in Athens was a big car park in there of military vehicles, which had never been issued. So I went on the scrounge to see if I could find anything different, and I found a queer looking vehicle. It's an armoured troop carrier called the Dragon. It's open, but it's armoured plated all the way round. So
was it tracked or
no, wheeled? Just wheels.
Yeah.
I was, and I managed to get some petrol, because there was some petrol there. I filled it up, went and picked Major Aronson up, and we set off for Corinth, where everybody else was going. I mean, the roads was packed. It was quite solid. I couldn't tell you quite how far it is from Athens to Corinth. I should say maybe 15, 20 miles. And we got to the Corinth Canal, the bridge, road and rail bridge, where we got stopped. And of course, they were sorting us all out.
Who stopped you? Was this military police?
All military police, and God knows who it is. Because they was guarding the bridge. Stopped the German troops getting over, you see. And I was very unfortunate there. Major Harrison volunteered me to stop behind with 184 men to dig yourselves in on the south bank of the canal. And our job was to stop any German. First of all, we had to mine the bridge. Well, that wasn't a problem, because the lorries coming down was bringing high explosives and shells and God knows what with them. And so we both rolled everything under the bridge and then fused it, ready for takeoff. And our whole idea was that we were to see the last ground forces over the British, or whoever it was, Australians, British, or we were to check them over the bridge and find out how far the Germans was behind them. And when things got too close, we were supposed to blow the bridge.
How did you learn to fuse things then? Where did you learn that?
You don't learn it. You just work it out.
Oh, is that sort of engineer toss?
Well, I'd seen the fuses being used, you know, the long fuses. We put a match on, go. So you just learn that. Yeah. So every time we got a load of ammunition and high explosives and rolled down the bank under the bridge, we just extended the fuses. Mm. It only took about 5 or 6 minutes, like, less than that, for it to go up. But I was saying, we dug ourselves in on the bank, on the left-hand side of the bank, on the Bay of Corinth Bay, as it's called, Corinth Bay. There's a big mountain, and there's a bay there where the water comes in. And then it's about a mile to the bridge. And then, of course, the bridge continues on and then to Kalamata, the other side of Greece. It went straight through. It comes from Kalamata to Corinth and out into the sea again. And we were well dug in. We managed to get guns. And we weren't having much of a problem. We were getting bombed pretty regularly, Stukas and...
What was the view like looking forward then from your positions across the...
Well, it was pretty flat. Yeah. You could see for about 2 miles where the main road ran to Athens.
Yeah.
But there wasn't a lot of activity on as far as German ground troops was concerned then. Mm. So we were kind of sitting pretty. We were dug in, well dug in.
Were you in one-man pits or two-man
pits? Oh, no, I had pits. What was it? I had 184 men. I think I had about 8 pits.
Yeah.
Just dugouts. With the guns mounted inside.
What sort of guns had you got then?
We had all sorts. Bren guns. Mm. Greek guns. Most of them were Greek guns. I used to love the Greek guns. These automatic Greek guns. They were lovely guns, they were.
What sort of rounds did they shoot?
Oh, had a big drum on them.
Yeah.
And you had a man laying down the side of it, and you was firing, and all he had to do was keep just rubbing his hand up the drum to keep it moving.
Yeah.
And I think there'd be about 250 rounds in a drum. Pretty lethal.
What calibre was that? Was that a...
Oh, it was only a 303 sort of stuff. Yeah. Armoured piercing. Some of it was armoured piercing. Yeah. But the majority of it was just plain.
These men that you'd got there, where were they from? Were they...
They consisted of all regiments.
Ah.
I had Jews, I had Indians, English... Australians, I had everyone. It's just those that, well, they didn't volunteer, but somebody volunteered for them, you see. Which you never volunteer in the army in any case. You know.
So you've got effectively a great number of stragglers. It was quite a large...
Well, they were all stragglers.
Yeah.
And they got stopped. And then there was issued to me. Mm. And I had to inform them what was going to take place and get digging. And actually, I didn't know half of them. Well, I didn't know any of them, really. They were all strangers to me. But they were all in the same situation.
Yeah. How deep were your pits, then? How deep down did you manage to get?
Oh, about three and a half feet.
Yeah.